Hello everybody, I'm Adam Thorne and we're here today at the Central Coast Air Show. It's not actually started yet, we're doing this on the Friday as everyone's setting up. And I'm delighted to be joined by Squadron Leader Sam Wright. Sam, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And the reason we've got you here on the show today is that you basically are, I want to get this right, you're in charge of the RAF balloon, I'm calling it. Is that fair to say?
Yep, 100%. So I call myself the RAF balloon pilot. I'm the only permanent Air Force balloon pilot in the Air Force. So yeah, RAF balloon pilot, balloon flight commander, either of those works.
So you're basically probably the only pilot in the RAF that can say you're the only one that can captain this balloon.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got a couple of reservist pilots and there's one or two guys that have actually done the job before. But as far as currently posted as the balloon pilot, yeah, I'm the guy.
So tell us about, because people will say, why does the RAF have a balloon? Because this is not of use in a war zone. What is the point of it? What do you do with it?
Yeah, it's funny. That's one of the first questions we get asked, especially when we take people for a little ride. Sometimes people think it's a stealth thing, which it's not. It's only stealthy for 8 out of every 10 seconds. The rest of the time it's noisy as anything. Basically, it's there to promote a positive image. So it's a very, very effective. It's also an extremely cheap way of promoting Air Force, promoting defence in general. So just as an example, our whole operation is cheaper for 12 months than a single roulette display. So very, very cheap. We actually get to go to a lot of places that won't get things like roulettes or jet fly pass or any of that sort of stuff. And we're also unique in that people can actually, you might be on an oval at a school somewhere, people can actually walk up and touch the aeroplane and talk to the pilot and have a ride in it and all that sort of business. So it's unique in Australia. It's also very unique around the world. As far as I can gather, at the moment there aren't any hot air balloons operating in any air forces. I know the US Marine Corps, I think, or US Army had one for about 2 years. And I think the Royal Air Force has got a balloon club. But as far as actual in the Air Force balloons, I think we might be the only ones in the entire world.
That's pretty good. You've got something here that no other Air Force or most other Air Force can't compete with. Now, this is a really obvious question. How do you set this thing up? You turn up to an air show like here and you go all around the country. How do you go from, does it come in a big van? How do you inflate it? How does it all work?
Yeah, again, that's another thing people like to ask us, and people often assume, how long did it take you to fly here? Oh, no, we didn't actually fly here. The balloon itself lives in the back of a trailer that we tow behind one of our recovery vehicles. So what we'll do is we'll basically drive to the cleared space that we've got, and normally we just need a patch of ground, so something like a sporting oval, just a bit of flat grass that's about 60 metres across. We take it out of the back of the trailer. We set it all up and then it lies on its side. So just picture the basket lying on its side. The envelope, so the big pit that people call the balloon, the envelope's lying deflated on the ground, sort of stretched out. What we do is we use a big fan to do a thing called a cold inflation. So we fill the balloon up with cold air so that it's got its shape and there's a big void in the middle of the balloon there. And then we'll turn on the burners, heat up the air. Once the air heats up, it wants to rise. The whole thing stands up. And we're pretty much good to go. So to convert from being just a normal free flight in a balloon to being a tethered flight, we've got three big dyna ropes that basically hang from the sides of the burner frame. We connect them to the back of our three vehicles and basically go up and down. That lets us go up to about 50 feet above the ground and keeps us from floating away or into the rest of the air show.
And how much kind of like non-tethered flight do you get to do with this each year?
A fair bit. We try to fly when we're not away on task. If we're away on a task, we'll fly heaps, like every morning. But when we're generally hanging around Canberra, because that's where we're normally based, we'll try and program three flights a week. Ballooning being what it is, it's very sensitive to the weather. Normally it's wind that's get us, but occasionally there'll be a bit of rain or a bit of low cloud will get us as well. So I normally say we cancel about half of the stuff that we program or commit to, and that's just the nature of ballooning. So, yeah, probably maybe 60, 70 flights a year. So fairly regular flying. And the tethering, sometimes it works. And we end up tethering for 6 hours. Sometimes we won't even get it up because the conditions just aren't right. But when it works really, really well.
And how bad has this La Nina been for ballooning?
It's been a bit tricky. So obviously, depending on what sort of restrictions we had with COVID, that'll determine what we can actually do. So passenger flying for us has taken a real hit. And we really haven't been doing very much of that at all. Obviously, there's no way to socially distance in a balloon basket. But on the plus side, we are outside. So the chances of spreading things around are not quite as bad. But, we're only just starting to come back into it. So we were down at the West Sail Air Show a couple of weeks ago. And, we got about 4 hours of tethering in there. And, we weren't really operating to any restrictions. People had a few bits and pieces available if they needed it, but there weren't any restrictions on what we were doing. So we got several hundred people through flight. So until earlier this year, we really weren't doing very much at all, apart from a bit of currency flying. But now we're basically getting back towards normal operations, just about now.
And how on earth did you get this job? This is not a normal thing to get into. How did you stumble into this? That's what I need to know.
Yeah, no, I did stumble into it very much. So I started my career as a, for want of a better word, just a normal RAF pilot. So I went and did pilot's course over in Pierce. I was a Herc guy, so I flew E models and H model Hercs for a while. Went off, became a QFI, came back to fly J models. I taught on J models. I decided that I was going to do what most Air Force guys do, and I went to the airlines. So I was at Cathay for about a year. Decided I didn't like Cathay and I preferred the Air Force, so I came back to the Air Force, flew some more Hercs. And I think I got about 25 or 26 years of flying under my belt. And I was getting to that point in my career where it was, you eventually grow out of flying. It's sort of, you get promoted out of it or you just get too old for it. And I thought that my flying had pretty much come to an end. And the postings people rang me up and said, "Hey, we got two jobs. You can either go back to the school as an instructor in Pierce, or you can fly the balloon." And obviously, I went, "Oh, I'll go back to Pierce as an instructor." But I had a chat to the missus, and she said, "Well, there isn't a job for me over in West Australia. What about the balloon?" I sort of. I thought I'll give it a go. And funniest thing, it's one of the best jobs I've ever had. I've been at the balloon now for over 5 years. So I did my first posting, which was 3 years, got an extension out of that for another couple of years, and now I'm a thing called spec air crew, so specialist air crew on the balloon. And I'll be here for another 6 years at least. So thoroughly enjoy it. But it's been a funny journey, and it's definitely not a typical career for a RAF pilot.
Do you have to go through special training? Is there special qualifications you have to get, or is it quite straightforward? Because surely if you can fly an aircraft, then you can fly a balloon, maybe?
It's funny that. My ballooning qualifications are all governed by a combination of the Australian Ballooning Federation, so it's treated like recreational aviation. It's sort of a self-governing body. But also, on the commercial side, that's governed by CASA. So I've got my, they call it the private pilot certificate, which allows you to go and fly a hot air balloon in a non-commercial setting. I also went off and got my commercial license as well. That's just a development thing. I've got no intention of ever being a commercial balloon pilot. So all the training's basically governed by that. It's funny, I say to people that when I first did pilot's course, it was all completely new. You're learning that if you pull back on the stick, the ground gets small and all that sort of business. And really, when I went from different aircraft types, it was all the same. Yes, it was different. There's different systems, different levels of technology. Obviously, the aeroplane's got different roles. But fundamentally, it was the same thing. Aeroplane rolls left, aeroplane rolls right, stick back, stick forward, that sort of thing. On the balloon, it's completely different. It was like going back to the first flight that I ever did on pilot's course, completely new thing. So, yes, I've got a big advantage in that I understand the airborne environment very well. I can speak on the radio. I can read meteorology reports, that sort of stuff. But there is a lot of new stuff. Like the one that I tell people often is Micromet. Micromet was never a consideration when I was flying a Herc. But now I'm in a balloon. I actually care about how does that air go around that hill, or how does it go over those trees, that sort of stuff, because that's the sort of thing that I can use to maneuver the balloon now. So yeah, it's been a novelty. I reckon it took me 3 years before I got past the point where it was a case of, as soon as I was airborne, I was looking for somewhere to land. I was sort of going, right, I've got to set myself up for a landing, because you can't muscle this aeroplane anyway. You can't fight against it. It'll go where it goes, whether you like it or not. But yeah, 3 years, I stopped being nervous about flying. I started being able to enjoy the flight. And then you get towards, you know, the 40-minute mark, and you go, oh, it's time to start thinking about a landing. All right, we can manoeuvre a landing. And I could generally get it where I wanted it to go. So, yeah, but it's been good. And the other aspect of the job is the non-ballooning part, the interaction with the public and that sort of thing. It's funny, as a Herc guy, you'd often go somewhere and you've got a bunch of army guys, they've just come off an exercise, everyone's miserable and smelly and all that sort of stuff, no one's happy. Whereas on the balloon, every time I have anyone come flying with me or come to events like this, they're having the best day of their life. So very, very positive. It's good for the soul, I'd say. So,
yeah. It's amazing, because we talk about aviation and both militarily and commercial. The technology on these things is incredible now. People would argue a lot of commercial airliners, they basically fly themselves. But yep. On a balloon, you haven't got that, I would imagine. Is that what you like about it so much? You say you've got to be up there making proper judgment calls all the time.
Oh, yeah, no, it's very raw. It's fundamentally, it's the same, more or less the same thing that they've been doing on balloons for the last 200 years. It's 200-ish years, I suppose. But, you know, it's a big sack of air with a basket underneath it, and you heat the air to go up, and you let the air cool down or vent some of the air to make it go down. And you go up and down to find the wind that's pointing in the direction you want to maneuver the balloon. And that has been the way people have flown balloons since day one. That's just the way it's done. And so, yes, technology's changed a little bit in that the burner might be a bit more efficient and the materials might be a little bit more robust and stronger. But fundamentally, yeah, you're right. It is a centuries-old art, and it is very much, I say to people, ballooning's like sailing a boat. It's very, very easy to do, because I mean, it goes up and it goes down. It's very, very simple. And if you were just trying to balloon around a big grassy plain, very, very easy thing to do. But it's very, very hard to do well. So it's, yes, it's a science, but it feels so much like an art. It's not funny. It's all so much judgment and experience, and, you know, everything wants to change all the time, and, you know, give it a little bit of a nudge this way or that way to make it do what you want it to do. But, yeah, very rewarding. And sort of, I feel like it's one of those things, like sailing a boat, you can spend your whole life doing it and still finding ways to do it a little bit better and improving. So, yeah, keeps you engaged.
It's interesting. So you're dealing with the public and you're seeing people's reactions. When kids see a balloon, particularly in the sky, everybody loves it. Everybody looks at it. Why is that? What is the magic that you get from balloons that you maybe don't necessarily always get from aircraft?
I think it's the closeness, the fact that you can walk up to it and touch it, and I think it's the size. That's the other thing. And also looking inside, something that people always comment about is the huge void inside it. You know, the balloon's big when you stand back from 20 metres away and look at it, but when you're standing right up against it and you look inside it and there's this huge void that you could stick a tree inside or something like that, I think that's something unusual. And, yeah, that's probably a really big part of it. And the fact that you just don't see them very often. Yeah. You know, if you're in the right place, you'd see them all the time, you know, in Canberra. But, like here, for example, normally when we come to something like this, we'll come a day or two early to do a couple of flights around here. But this area is just not suitable for balloon flying. If you mess up, there's either ocean or national park. So, yeah, I'm a bit risk averse. I don't tend to fly when it's going to be too difficult for me to not mess up. So, yeah, you just never see balloons around here. So, yeah, people will come along tomorrow, see the balloon, and it'll... I would wager that a fairly significant portion of the people that turn up would have never seen a balloon before. So, yeah, but they would have seen plenty of aeroplanes. And here they probably would have seen heaps of fast jets as well.
And final question, you've had this incredible career, kind of a very unique. You've done aircraft, you've done teaching, you've done commercial airlines, you've done balloons. Why aviation? What is it that you love about it so much you'd keep going with this?
Well, yeah, that's a hard one to answer. See, I knew I wanted to be an Air Force pilot since I was about 8 years old. There was a guy, one of my dad's mates, I grew up on a farm, and so a guy a couple of farms down, his son joined the Air Force, and so I'd hear stories about that, and I thought, oh, that sounds good. But, I mean, it's a pretty normal thing for a 10-year-old boy to be into noisy machines and that sort of stuff. So it's sort of, it was always the thing that I wanted to do. I guess the thing that I like about, well, obviously the motivations change as you get older. I mean, I'm not really an office guy. I like being outside. I like doing things with my hands. So I guess it's one of those places where I get the opportunity to do that. There's time in the office, a fair bit of time in the office actually, but a lot of my work does involve walking around, chatting to people, being outside, playing with a big machine, making noise, all that sort of good stuff. So, yeah, to a degree, I've got to be a big kid for the last 30 or so years. So
getting away with it.
Yeah, yeah, getting paid for it too. Holy smoke, yeah. So it's a rich tapestry of things, but yeah, that'd probably be the best way to explain it.
Well, I think on that perfect note, we will wrap things up. But thank you very much for your time and good luck tomorrow and day after.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot. My pleasure. And hope to see you around. Hope to see lots of people turning up.
Thank you very much. Cheers to that, Sam.
Good on you. Thanks.